In our first segment, we hear from Tim Mrzak, a 1966 graduate of Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, who worked as director of campus planning and facility design from 1990 until 2001. For the past 2 years, he and his group have been vocal critics of RPI President Shirley Jackson. He spoke with the Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Steve Pierce about his concerns with financial management and campus policies at RPI.
We finally came to the point where, because we weren't being responded to or heard, that we decided to launch our website, which laid all of this stuff out in pretty good black and white, straightforward stuff that engineers could understand. And before we did that, we sent it all to the trustees and we said, look, if there's something here that you don't agree with or you think we're wrong, let us know and we'll change it and we won't publish it. And we never heard a word from them in terms of whether anything that we were putting forth was incorrect. So we can only assume that they've dug in for whatever reason, and we don't know. I wish we knew why they weren't willing to engage.
So you have not only these financial concerns, but also there have been a number of things in the news over the past few months. Controversy about the student union, some controversy about the Greek life system on campus. How does that fit into what you're talking about?
Yeah, it fits in because it deals with what we've been hammering on in terms of governance. The first thing that happened along those lines was when the administration came forth and decided they were going to take over the student union. Student union's been around for 100 and some odd years. Students were doing a great job running it. In fact, the student union ran in the black, whereas the institute was a little shaky in terms of its finances. And they decided that the students weren't going to be allowed to run the thing anymore. And as recently as, I don't know, 2-3 months ago, the chief financial officer came down even harder saying, hey, guys, in the union, you've been running this multi-million-dollar operation for years, but guess what? If you want to make an expenditure over $5,000, you've got to come and get permission from us now. So it's another chink in the armor and another attempt, to solidify the fact that they wanted to take it over. So that was one thing. The second is this thing that cropped up most recently, which is the attempt to make a run on the Greek system. Now, the premise that we're understanding is that there have been some issues in fraternities that some bad actors and some things that have gone wrong, and it looks like they're trying to tar everybody with the same brush. And the first thing they did without consulting or bringing anybody into the room to discuss it was to declare that they weren't going to allow the fraternities to rush this coming fall. That would be a disaster. I mean, fraternities have to rush to keep their numbers up, to fill their houses, to have their brotherhoods thrive and survive. And there was a real pushback, not only from the active chapters and people there, but the AIGC, which is the Alumni Intergroup Council, and the administration sort of reneged a bit and backtracked. And they said, okay, we're going to let you rush, but you can't start till October. We're going to convene a group, and we're going to do some talking about how we're going to handle this. Our concern is that it's an indicator that maybe they're looking to take over the system. And we don't know. We think the statistics that deal with the incidents they're referring to as the premise for having done this are a little sketchy, and we haven't really seen the actual numbers and how they play out in incidents that occur in fraternities versus the rest of the campus. So it's a little suspect along those lines.
Did this precede the recent revelation about the sexual assault that took place allegedly and as part of one of the fraternity parties?
I think it may have. It may have had something, it may have been involved in that. I don't know the exact timing and how those lined up, but I think the idea was, is the prevalence and the concern and the incidence of those kinds of situations in fraternities any better or worse than the rest of the campus? And if not, why are you going after just the fraternities instead of everybody?
We're speaking with Ted Mrzak. He's a activist with the group Renew Rensselaer, a group of alumni and others who are trying to support efforts to protect the student union governance system and also the Greek system on campus, along with a number of other things. I myself am an RPI graduate. I have a graduate degree from RPI and was there when Shirley Jackson took over as president. And I know that it was a rocky transition. RPI really was the epitome of a good old boys network on a certain level, mostly male, mostly white. And so it was quite shocking when an African-American woman was brought in to run the administration. Do you think there's any chance that some of the conflict that's resulted over the years is part of that transition?
Well, I think you're asking me a question on two levels. One is there an issue with any sort of racial overtones or concern about the fact that Shirley Jackson is female? Absolutely not. The numbers and the facts and the things that we're dealing with have nothing to do with that. And that issue, people may know, was only brought up by one professor, guy who accused a lot of the alumni of being racist. And I think that was really unfortunate in the fact that the administration chose to send that out to all alumni was even more unfortunate. But so my answer to that part of the question is no. The idea that Shirley Jackson was to be a change agent, I imagine that ruffled some feathers and some people were not too happy with what was happening. But in fact, I think that being logical and reasonable, if the results had been good and the Institute had thrived, if the ratings had gone up, if the financials were good and she was earning her salary, I don't think anybody would have really complained about that. But when you look at the two versions of the Rensselaer plan, which have been in effect at Rensselaer now since she came, a lot of the things that were put forth in there haven't come to fruition. And a lot of the ratings and a lot of the metrics that we deal with and looking at the health of the Institute have gone down. And one of the other things that particularly I think is of concern is when Shirley Jackson took the helm, the participation in giving on the part of alumni, it's never been good at Rensselaer. It stood at around 16%. Recently, when the most recent figures came in, that has decreased to 8%. So that's a phenomenal decline, and it really says something about alumni and their concern about what's going on. And the only way they get to vote at this point is with their pocketbook. Part of the platform that the Renew Rensselaer organization has suggested to the trustees is that we allow the alumni to elect some number of trustees to the board, and that way we would have a voice. They have out of hand rejected that, even though that's a fairly popular model with a number of colleges, particularly Dartmouth, which incidentally, that's where Shirley Jackson's son went. You would think they might be interested in doing that, but they're not.
Well, you bring up a lot of interesting points, and unfortunately, we don't have enough time to go into each of them in the detail that it deserves. But I know in the few minutes left, it would be interesting to hear a little bit about the free speech issues on campus and the involvement of the New York Civil Liberties Union in the protest there. Can you tell us in a moment or two what's at stake there?
I sure can. I was at the meeting that the New York Civil Liberties Union had in Troy not too long ago, where one of the subjects was the suppression of free speech at RPI. And that meeting was attended by a number of local folks, along with some of us from the New Rensselaer, and also Norman Strong, who was the acting VP for Student Life and the Council for Rensselaer. And when we discussed a number of issues in there, we didn't get some really great answers. But one of the things that Mr. Strong indicated was that there had been a number of instances where posters that were following the rules of postering at RPI were being torn down by, we can only suspect, the public safety people. And he assured us that was probably not going to happen if posters that went up in the future were following the rules. Well, guess what? There's a video out on Facebook right now showing, or I think it's YouTube, showing posters that have been removed since that meeting. So I don't think the atmosphere has gotten any better in terms of students being able to speak freely there at the school. One of the things we're trying very desperately to do is to get a meeting of the Rensselaer Alumni Association and a notice out to all the alumni to come together to discuss these issues that we've brought up. And we're running into some real difficulty attempting to get that to happen. We think that there's certainly a bit of control from the administration trying to make it not happen or make it happen at their convenience. And we even went so far as to follow the bylaws of the organization and provide a petition with over 100 signatures of alumni who said, we want this meeting. And it still hasn't been called. So we're concerned, you know, that things are still being stonewalled and people are not willing to listen and engage.
We've been listening to Tim Merzak of the group Renew Rensselaer, speaking with Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Steve Pierce. For more information about the concerns with RPI management, visit www.renewrensselaer.com.